Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 62 of The Great Escape Minutes, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob.
I'm Tom.
And once again today joining us is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham, A Movie a Day, and the host of The Lambcast. Welcome back, Richard.
Good to be here again. It's always fun talking about movies.
Of course, especially The Great Escape. Especially, we didn't even mention this yesterday. We've actually passed the 1 hour mark. We're almost a third of the way through this movie. So, you know, hopefully everyone's been enjoying it so far, and that they're going to continue enjoying it. So, as much as you've listened to up until now, you have almost twice as much coming. Stay tuned for some great episodes. Minute 62 starts off with Werner looking in awe at a chocolate bar. And finishes with Henley looking at the contents of Werner's wallet.
Nice bookends there.
Yeah, everything's connected to Werner. As we discussed yesterday, the whole idea of this scene is for Henley to try and get something from Werner, whether it's friendship or when we find out at the end of this minute that it's a little more than friendship. No, not that way. It's just, you know... He's trying to bribe him to get stuff, get information from him. And so we know that he gets a wallet at the end. So as I mentioned before, this minute starts with Werner picking up the red chocolate bar and taking a hard look at it, where you can see in some ways his mouth watering. You know, as we mentioned yesterday, when Henley's taking everything out, he starts looking and you know, he's amazed at all the things that he actually has that he got from his grandmother. Again, we've established that at least James Garner is 35. So to say that his grandmother is still alive, Werner has to believe it.
Well, I was thinking about
whether we believe it. Whether we believe it or not is a different story. The idea is that Werner needs to believe it. Yeah, what were you thinking about, Richard?
I was thinking, you know, it may be that Henley is just using the reference to his grandmother as a euphemism for the Red Cross and the packages that the prisoners would get. He may not have meant it literally that it was his grandmother. He's just saying, you know, somebody who's out there looking after him. I don't know that he needed to depersonalize it that way and make it, you know, substitute the idea that I'm getting something from an official organization. But he's talking about, I think, it a little bit more metaphorically than literally.
Okay, that's very possible. That's very true. I think it also has to do with partially with the fact that he knows that Werner's English isn't that great. So he can say whatever you want.
Yes.
You know, there's a whole idea of European in English, you know, for foreign language speakers, you know, non-English speakers, that there are certain things that sometimes you can say and they might not grasp it. Because, I mean, as we see throughout the movie, the English speakers make a lot of fun of the German speakers by the way they speak to them and talk to them, sometimes in sarcastic ways and sometimes in literal ways. So it might be that part of the whole idea here is that you know, he's just trying to throw a few jabs at him that, you know, I can say whatever I want because you're not going to understand. It doesn't matter.
Have you guys talked about the original people that the story is based on yet? Because this Henley's character is based on a real person, and that person actually did speak German.
Yes, that's okay. True. But we've touched on things in very minute fashion. But go ahead. What do you have to say about it?
It seems like that would be an easier way for somebody to kind of create this relationship where they could become friends, potentially bribe them, manipulate them a little bit if you speak the same language. And they don't make use of it here in the movie, but in the actual circumstances, I think it would have been a lot easier for a prisoner to connect with a guard if he shared the language with the guard to some degree.
Right. I mean, as I mentioned yesterday when I was quoting from the book, so there were numerous POWs, you know, that would get the Germans to, you know, to try and butter them up by giving them coffee and, you know, other cigarettes and different other goodies that they were trying to get. The truth is based on what I read, Henley isn't based on a specific character. He's an amalgamation of numerous ones. But there was someone named, I think, Axel. I think the book mentions that was his name, where he was a German speaker. Because obviously, the Germans didn't really speak English.
Well, I checked on a website, Stalagluft 3, mm-hmm. Great Escape. And according to them, Marcel Erik Zelslissen, who was born in Northampton in England to a German father and an Irish mother, and he was encouraged to go into the family business and encouraged by his father, who was German, to study in Berlin, and that's where he got his education and was familiar with the language and the customs of that society. And apparently he was contacted by British intelligence, who wanted him to be in their spy service, but he preferred to stand up to the enemy face to face.
And he unfortunately really got there face to face.
Yes. He was shot down on the 6th of April. On the 6th of April, coincidentally, in 1943, during the Battle of El Dwadi Airat in Tunisia, and subsequently moved to Italy, where after the usual interrogation, he was transported on to Stalag Luft III. Then he changed his name to Axel. That's where it comes from. We are talking about the same guy.
Yeah, we're talking about the exact same guy, Axel, yeah. that I know. Like I said, the site that I saw showed that Henley isn't based on a specific person, but on numerous people. Yeah, that's fine. That's good, too. Great information. No question about that. In this scene, Henley's continuing to empty out the closet with all the loot that he got from Mac, last week. What I found really interesting is when he takes out the butter that Mac gave him that he says is Von Luger's butter, that he was able to... No, sorry. Henley said that he was able to get Von Luger's butter, if I remember correctly. But my question is how does Werner know that it's Von Luger's butter?
My guess...
It doesn't state it. It's not like it's going to be stamped on it. This belongs to the commandant. Don't go near it. Yeah, what were you saying, Richard? Do you guess that?
My guess would be that it's a German brand and that there was some question about supplies that went missing. That would be one of those things that probably guards would have been alerted to. Supplies have been missing from the stock of...
Von Luger. Von Luger's...
his pantry.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, they said that someone stole butter from his pantry. Okay, that's a good way to...
He's not Captain Queen.
That's very, very plausible.
Strawberries, but he says stuff is missing from the pantry and keep your eyes open for it.
Yeah. Okay. No. That's actually plausible. I didn't think about that fact. I was thinking to myself, that they're sitting in the German mess hall, and Von Luger's sitting there with the butter, and not letting anyone else have. So it's like, oh, okay. Now we know that this is Von Luger's butter. Your explanation is probably more plausible than mine. And I love the way that Henley just says, "Oh, keep it. I won't tell anybody.
Like it's no big deal." Well, he wants to establish that relationship. Hey, we're buddies. We'll keep each other secrets. It's not a problem. You take it, and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Ingratiating himself a little bit more to Werner.
Yeah, but at this point, Werner starts to get even more scared than he was before.
Very scared.
The whole time, he's you see that the his level of fear keeps rising little by little each time. In this case, there's no question about that. I mean, he's like, okay, you got Von Luger's butter, I'm out of here.
It almost seems like Henley, without knowing where we're going at the end of the minute, that Henley is pushing it too far. As he keeps going, he pulls out the Von Luger's butter. It's obviously we see what his end game really was, but it's at the start of the minute, he's got the hook set. He's just gotta reel him in. But instead of reeling him in, he just keeps playing with them. He's like, well, I've got all these other things, too. What do you think about all of this? And in doing so, it just pushes Werner a little too far and goes, I can deal with a certain level of risk. At this point, the risk is too great for whatever reward I think I can get out of this.
Right. No, I agree with that. I think that Henley went in with a general plan, but not a specific plan, just to see where things are going to go. I think also part of it has to do with the fact that the way that they wrote the script, because the movie's already 3 hours, and the amount of time that passes here in the movie is much shorter than what happened in real life. I mean, they had the whole escape took the whole planning of the escape and the escape itself took about a year. But there's no way that in this movie that's the way it is. I mean, they make it seem here that this all happens within a few short months. So, to try and establish that he's starting a friendship with Werner little by little, which is probably what really happened, you know, with Axel or with any of the other POWs, is much harder to show here. So they probably decided, the screenwriters decided that, okay, let's just put this all together and we'll have this one scene where the whole everything escalates to a point where, okay, now we're going to just do it real quickly.
And Henley is smart enough to improvise in the moment, too. He recognizes that Werner's become skittish, and he has to make an adjustment in this situation. He's going to lose his fish. So he tries another tact. He tries to force the bait on it. Well, and of course he uses that as subterfuge for what comes next.
Right. Now, I really like the way that Henley says, "You can keep it. We're friends." And and Werner goes back, "Will we still be friends with you in the cooler?"
Yes.
Which, you know, I it depends on you know what you're willing to get me. What you're willing to get me.
Well, at this point, and I think that this is going to be one of the things that happens when you look at a later sequence. He's got to get Werner on the hook so that he can use him a heck of a lot more than just in a casual friendship. He's got to get something on him. And this is where he gets the opportunity to get something on him, because getting a hold of the wallet and the papers that come up here in just a second, that puts Werner in Dutch, basically, with the camp, because he's going to be the one who's responsible for giving out key information. Even though it's inadvertent, even though he was taken advantage of, he's not going to be in the cooler. He's going to be at the Russian front.
Exactly. I mean, and Henley states it, you know, he says, you know, Werner says, okay, I'm going to go report this. And they're like, okay, what are you going to report? That you were in my room alone,
right,
with me?
Exactly. That we were chatting in my room. And
exactly.
You found this? Yeah, that's when he starts setting the hook that he can blackmail him. And now he's got to get something more on him, which he does.
Yeah. I wonder how he knows where his wallet is.
You know? All right. This is where I'm going to pop in with my little bit of business, because I have a small amount of familiarity with this. I'm not an expert on it.
You're a pickpocket?
My father was.
Ooh. Okay, great.
My father was a professional magician, and he had a pickpocket act that he did. And that would be one of the things that you routinely did, was you would find a subterfuge to get close to somebody. For example, you would steal their watch and then give them back their watch. And while they're fussing with their watch, you would pat them down on their jacket to see what they have in the pockets of their jacket. And when he starts shoving the chocolate bar into Werner's waistband, that gives him a chance to put pressure in one place while he's applying pressure in another spot. That's very typical kind of activity that you do with picking somebody's pocket, why people are always told to be careful whenever somebody bumps up against you, because that's really what's going on, is you're paying attention to that and you're not paying attention to other things that are going on.
Interesting. Wow. Okay, that's actually very fascinating. I never thought about that.
I guess I always, so something I've just noticed anecdotally, and you guys can either help confirm this or deny it. Most men I know carry their wallet in their dominant side's back pocket. So right-handed people carry their wallet in their back right pocket. Left-handed people carry it in their back left. Which, it also seems like Werner's right-handed, so it does also give us a little indication where he carries it. I don't know if either of you do it differently, but...
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, I keep my wallet in, for any pickpocket who wants to try and get it from me, I keep my wallet in my front right pocket.
Yeah, same here.
Oh.
You know, because I think I'm more likely to notice if somebody's doing that, and I don't like sitting on my wallet.
Yeah, I have same reason. I have the exact same reason for that.
But
I find
it
annoying to sit on
these
my
guys,
wallet.
These guys, Werner's wearing a uniform, so there is a jacket as well as uniform pockets, and there may not be the same number of pockets that you have to go through. I don't know.
Right. Wow, that's actually fascinating that your father was a professional pickpocket slash magician.
Professional magician.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, he didn't make his living stealing from people, but he did do an act where he did, do all those kinds of things, take people's wallets and their watches and their jewelry and their neckties and a variety of stuff, and it was fun.
He told you his secrets?
I lived with the man for his, most of his life. I picked up things. He taught me stuff when I was a kid, but I lost interest in magic as a potential vocation somewhere along the line when I got to high school, and I got interested in girls and more interested in that.
Right. No, I wasn't asking you to divulge all the secrets, but I always look at magicians, and I know that what they're doing is a trick, but I can't always tell how they're doing the trick. You know, like the whole idea where they write something down and put it in a box, who's going to win an election or who's going to win the Oscars or whatever it is. And then, they open up the safe and it has the right answers. I never know how they do it. I know it's a trick because I don't believe that people really are clairvoyant and, are able not at all. So that always fascinates me to look at those things happening, knowing that it's a trick.
But well, there's always a combination.
Not really caring enough how they do it. It would be interesting to hear. But
there's always a combination of a trick, but also some physical skill that you have to go through. There's a way to manipulate cards so that you can force cards on people. You can move a card from one spot to another. You can locate cards in a particular order. But you have to have the physical skills to do that. You have to know not only how to do it, but you have to practice doing it. And it's one of those things that, you got to spend your 10,000 hours doing.
Yeah, exactly. At this point, after he does the pickpocket shtick, he takes the wallet, and the minute actually ends with him smiling as he starts, he smirks. He smirks in a devilish way. As he seems to be inspecting the wallet, which makes you wonder what his civilian profession was. You never know. Maybe he was a magician. Maybe he was just
a thief.
Who knows? In a few years from now, he's actually part of the Ocean's 11 team.
That's it.
Exactly. Do either of you have anything else for this minute?
I got two quick things. One is that is an incredibly conveniently sized bar of chocolate.
Those are large chocolate bars.
Huge. Yes. And it just happened. Yes, it's big enough to hide the big wallet behind. And the other thing I wonder is, you watch movies where you have pickpockets made recently, and they're always much cleaner than this one is. And I wonder if this is James Garner just not being particularly adept at it, or if it's intentionally made to look clunky so that we as the audience see it. But if it's intentionally clunky so we as the audience see it, I go back to when Steve McQueen picked the keys off the guard and we're specifically not shown when he does it.
Right.
Well, I do know that was
a camera trick.
I do know that they do sometimes make things intentionally clunky for audiences to notice that. I have a friend who is a magician who helped me sell my father's equipment after my father had developed Alzheimer's and I needed to sell everything. And he was an actor also. He's also a consultant in movies and a magician. And he did the Maverick movie, which, by the way, does feature James Garner. and he plays the crooked dealer at the end of the big game in the movie. And he had a smooth move that he used to switch the decks, and the director, Richard Donner, didn't want it because he said the audience has to notice. They have to notice that the switch has taken place. So they had him do it in a different way. So that may very well be what happened here. They want us to notice. that he is doing something to get the wallet while the subterfuge is going on with the chocolate bar in the waistband.
Okay, that's definitely possible. Okay, do either of you have anything else for this minute?
No.
I don't.
Okay, Richard, you want to once again tell people how they can find you online?
You can, yes, you can locate me at my personal website, Kirkham Movie A Day. By the way, I have two sites. One's a doppelganger of the other. It's all the same content. One's on WordPress, one's on Blogger. But Kirkham Movie A Day, if you type that in, that'll take you to the WordPress site. You have to go to Blogspot to get the other site, but both of them have pretty much the same content. There are a few extras on the Blogspot site that I don't have on the WordPress site, but either is great. And, of course, come and listen to me and my guests on a regular basis on the weekly podcast, The Lambcast.
All right, great. Hopefully we will get to come back tomorrow. We haven't tortured you too much.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Another couple All of right. days of this, and I should be ready to watch the whole movie again.
Well, just watch it 1 minute at a time.
That's you
know. All right. So we'd appreciate if everyone listening can go to the podcatcher that they use and rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. You can reach us by going to our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. You can join us on our Facebook group to chat with us at The Kula. You can write to us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is greatescapemxm. Or you can just send us an email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. So hopefully we'll be back tomorrow. That's it for today. Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.